All right, hey guys, welcome back to the studio. Today we have poet, producer, and hype man, Kevin Allen Lamb. Welcome to the studio, Kevin.
Here we are, off to see the wizard.
Yes. Kevin, how's it going?
I'm great. Happy to be here. Happy we recently connected and I discovered this wide world of beautiful things in Clarkston, Michigan.
Yes. So, Kevin, you are big into poetry, obviously. You've authored a couple of books, so we'll reference those later today. I've watched some of your social media content, which is great. You're definitely an amazing hype man. I think it's awesome. I know you have a fan in my engineer here, Hannah,
okay.
At the studio.
All right.
So she's a big fan.
Thank you,
and speaks highly of you. Also, we have some mutual connections in the area. Jackie Pappas, who's a local musician and badass.
Yep, Jackie motherfucking Pappas.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, Jackie's been in the studio a time or two. And Kevin, so take us through your first book.
So I'm going to kind of start with over the last 2 years,
okay.
Because I'm a talent manager and a lot of my time and energy goes into managing other people's abilities. And when you do that, you have the tendency to neglect your own. So almost 3 years ago, I set the intention to publish a book a year. And that year I published Your Daily Guide to Shine, which is a collection of inspirational poetry and prose. It's the idea that you could open it up to any page on any day and it would help you feel better. Everything is just 1 to 2 pages. It also has snippets of my more meaningful band interviews. I am a music journalist. That's kind of my access point to the music world. I've been covering live music for about 10 years. And some of the people that helped change my life, whose lyrics are tattooed on my left and right wrist, the Avett Brothers, they have a song, Head Full of Doubt, Road Full of Promise, and a lyric, Decide What to Be and Go Be It. And after spending my life as a baseball player and a college baseball player, and then I got injured and tore my rotator cuff, and I kind of got disconnected from the only dream I had ever had. And the words of others, the Avett Brothers, helped me find words of my own. And I decided to dream again. And writing was that gift, and that kind of came through with music. So the introduction of Your Daily Guide to Shine talks about the role the Avett Brothers played in shaping my second dream, and how I got to interview Bob Crawford, who's the bass player and adopted brother of the Avett Brothers. And it was pretty cool that I got to interview them, and I published the story just ahead of them playing the Fillmore Detroit. And they shared out my story to their very big fan base. And I was one of like 2 photographers in the photo bay, and they actually came out to that song. So my favorite band, who I identified as helping change my life and had their lyrics tattooed on my wrist, came out at the Fillmore Detroit with that song, Head Full of Doubt, Road Full of Promise. And it rocked my world. And
yeah.
It was like a pat in the back from God or the universe, however you like to see it. And
yeah.
I was so moved that I couldn't contain my excitement, and I broke all the rules. You're not supposed to dance and draw attention to yourself in the photo bay, especially when you're a 6'7", long-haired, happy Viking, and most of the crowd knows you because it's your hometown. And by the end of that song, I was removed from the photo bay. But I took enough good photos in that 3.5-minute time that the next day, the Avett Brothers shared out my photos to the social media. And I was welcome back the next day. I just didn't have photo access. So I got to enjoy a second night of an evening with the Avett Brothers from the crowd.
That's amazing. I love that journey. And so you're multi-talented, multifaceted, a jack of all trades, it seems. You've got just a ton of talent backing you here. And you're also into photography.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting how that came about. Like, I always liked taking photos and framing them and had an eye for it. But it really wasn't until I got my first music credential. So I had been a sports writer. I'd covered the Lions, Tigers, Red Wings, Pistons, even did some sports talk radio show with WDFN. But I got a media pass through one of my blogs to cover Electric Forest, which is in Rothbury, Michigan, and it's highly regarded as one of the best festivals in the world.
Yeah.
Annually, 40 to 50,000 people come. It sells out before the lineup's even announced. And I got a media credential, only I had never really covered a music festival or concerts like as a photographer, but I really didn't want to borrow someone else's photos with my words in a story. So I borrowed a friend's camera, and that was the first time I photographed a live event. And just over time, you know, now I've probably photographed, you know, 1,000 bands and covered 30 or 40 festivals. And,
that's amazing. A little bit about the Electric Forest. That's electronic music.
Yeah, it's a healthy mix.
Right, okay.
So historically, it was String Cheese Incident, who's a jam bands festival. When it was Rothbury, it was like open, kind of like Bonnaroo would, but they were having trouble with finances. So they moved to the kind of more DJ model and really focused on the production and like the experience. I tell everyone, Electric Forest is so magical because they recreate Narnia.
Yeah.
Like you can be walking through the woods and there's a payphone ringing and so, you answer it and they tell you like secret directions and tasks to complete. And then you complete the task and you open up a secret door and you walk into an airplane hangar and they hand you champagne and there's a burlesque show. You know, it's like,
I was going to ask you to walk me through the Electric Forest because I've heard so many amazing things about Electric Forest, but I've never attended. But I've heard so many amazing things and I can only imagine what it would be like through your lens.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to share some of these
photos. It's been really special to me. Like in each of these books, like they all have memoir aspects of it because, you know, it's how I've experienced all these things. So like, whether it's the preface or, you know, in the prose, I kind of dance between poetry and prose and give people a glimpse of what my view has been over these, I don't know, last 10 years. And Electric Forest is significant in my arc as an artist, as a journalist, as a figure in the music community. My company is This Is a Good Sound, but that came from This Is a Good Sign, kind of like the Smiley Company or Life is Good. This is a good sign. It was a positive brand movement. It was a yellow street sign that helped people feel better in a world that was trying to focus on death and demise and what could go wrong. We were just trying to give people permission to believe that things could get better when you choose for them to, or if you shift your focus on it. And that was, it was the This Is a Good Sign blog was how I ever got my first music credential. And, you know, at music festivals and everywhere for about a couple of years of my life, I would walk around with a giant 18x18 good sign and, you know, just spreading good vibes before the world was using that as part of the common nomenclature.
Yeah.
And it was great. It really helped me connect with artists and fans, and it built a certain level of just like trust and love and vulnerability, because it wasn't that widely accepted right away. There was just a lot of negativity and, you know, people would come up to it and punch it when you're in the street. People just like didn't know what to do with someone, was trying to like connect with people and help them feel better. But that was sweet. And I learned a lot. And over time, the storytelling behind it, the journalism became more of a focus and the music became more of a focus. So like I walked away from the business of Good Sign, but I continue to be a Good Sign ambassador because, you know, the message is sound. And like that gave me a better footing in music, and Electric Forest continues to be a part of that. My most recent book, Love Is in the Details, I released it on what would have been my mom's 72nd birthday this past June. She died of leukemia. Prior to that, she had a double lung transplant. So because she had idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, she was losing most of the oxygen in her lungs. So she was playing tennis for a couple of years, going through like 4 or 5 oxygen tanks. Eventually, when she kind of thought, you know, hope had dwindled, she got a new pair of lungs. There was 9 people ahead of her on the transplant list. My mom's 6 feet. Lungs can go male or female. So she got those lungs, which is pretty remarkable.
I wanted to say, I saw a photo of you, your mom, and your father recently, and your mother is beautiful. And I was going to ask you, how tall was your mother?
Yep, six feet. She's Lithuanian. I'm half Lithuanian. And she was like a model, a painter, a dancer, and just...
It was easy to see all of that just from that photo. I was like, wow, this is a beautiful woman.
Mom was a special human. And that was why I really felt compelled to write this book in her memory. It's called Love Is in the Details. And it's a hopeful journey in grief. I discovered that writing about my mom helps me feel most connected to her. And I've learned that as long as we maintain and work on and evolve the bond with the ones we've loved and lost, they're always there, and we just have to look for them. And since I feel closer to my mom when I write about it, it helps me heal and it helps me grieve. And I figured if it helps me, it'll probably help others. It'll probably help my family. And I've already learned, and there's already been some like kind of spectacular happenings with it. Over the last 3 years, my friends have been opening Three Trees Vineyard in the Leelanau Peninsula. And in my time going up there, which ended up being the last place I ever spoke to my mom, and each one of the trees represents a mother or a matriarch in the ownership group that passed away, I'd put this book and my other book, Your Daily Guide to Shine, in one of those free library public boxes.
Oh, that's
and,
amazing, yeah.
You know, you put books in there and you hope it's going to find someone who needs it and vice versa. And I'd always check the boxes and usually it would be gone. And maybe a month ago, I got an email. I got my free paid subscriber on Substack. And there was a gal who was on respite in Northern Michigan. And she was taking a breath from caring for her mom who was dying. And she looked into one of those free public library boxes and she saw Love is in the Details and she knew it was for her. And she got it out and she opened it up and that confirmed what she knew. And, you know, she reached out and said how much it was already helping her and means to her. And it, you know, reminds me and hopefully reminds others that we're all very divinely connected and what we do matters and we can use our gifts to help and comfort and encourage and empower. And it always feels like we're alone when we're grieving the ones we love, but the fact that everyone around you is grieving someone or something they love is, it speaks to a stronger bond of all humans, of all living things. And I think there's beauty in that, there's strength in that, and there's resilience in that. So I continue to kind of follow the trail of breadcrumbs and create and see what comes out on the other side.
Yeah, I love that. There's so many topics I want to tackle with you, but you are such a well-rounded blend of a human that I find you so fascinating because your journey into sports, number one, what encouraged you like to travel down that path for baseball?
Some people talk about music with a hero's journey. I think athletes, there's this hero's journey too. Like I didn't wake up and decide to be an athlete. I just was one.
Right.
I was really gifted with my height, certain set of skills and talent. Of course, I wanted to play baseball. I had an older brother who was 5 years older than me. Started playing baseball when I was 5 or 6. I was on the cover of the Detroit Free Press for the first time when I was 8 years old, labeled the Randy Johnson of 8 year olds for my 44 mile an hour fastball.
Wow. Now, how tall were you at that age?
I don't know.
Okay.
4 or 5. I don't know. There is I was 8. It says it in the newspaper article, but I don't really remember.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was all in. Like, I was one of those young kids who was all in on a dream before he was 10 years old. And it was my choice. You know, it's one thing if it's coming from a parent's, but it was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I had all the reasons in the world to believe I could do it for a living. And I'm super grateful for how much my parents were supported me, like, you know, driving me across the country, driving my brother and sister across the country. My dad was my coach. You know, we went to Puerto Rico when we were 12 to play in the World Series. He coached with Dan Petrie, who's former Detroit Tigers World Series pitcher. And now he does a lot of the TV and radio.
Yep.
You know, Dan was a good friend of the family. And you know, high school, it went really well. And I played basketball as well. I'm tall and they kind of commingled. But like, you know, a lot of tall white guys, I can't really jump. It's more of a hustle guy, a defense guy, a 3-point shooter guy. Baseball, you know, I was 16. I led the state in wins and strikeouts. I was 13 and 1. I got a letter from every school in the country and pro interest. Over time, like a lot of people, I hurt my shoulder. Big heart. You always want to win. You keep on pitching. I think there was a time my junior year when I threw 165 pitches. And that year in Major League Baseball, only 2 pitchers threw over 145.
Wow.
My dad was really on that stuff. But I think coaches gave him some bad information that day. And, like, it's okay. Like, you know, I went to college to play baseball. And that was my first love of my life that I had to let go. Torn rotator cuff, frayed labrum, came back, was pitching again, would have had the same surgery. And I knew I had other gifts. I had always written. I knew I was good on a mic or with people. Yeah. So I let sports go quietly into the night. It wasn't that easy, but it was cool. It forced me to check in on all the other gifts I had. I covered high school sports for the local newspaper in High Point, North Carolina. I wrote for the school paper. I did the play-by-play announcing for our women's volleyball team. Did an internship with ABC Lansing and ABC 53 in Lansing when I was home for the summer. I tried a lot of things. In that, I ultimately discovered I didn't like any one of those things enough to commit a career to it. And I learned that my path was going to continue to be an unconventional one. And I'd probably have to create something to feel fulfilled and occupied and to continue chasing my dreams as they changed form.
And so, wow, you definitely have the voice. You definitely have the magic in many capacities. But then leading into your time in talk radio, you did a stint for sports radio.
Yeah. And
what was that like?
Yeah, so it was cool. So my first, the lead into that was I was freelancing for Sports Detroit magazine. It was a free monthly distributed at like 1600 CVSs, but I didn't care. It was my end to covering the Lions, Tigers, Red Wings, and Pistons. And you know, I was young, I was 22, I had long hair and tattoos, and I had never formally covered anything like this. So I was intimidated. And in a world at that time that especially told me that I was different, told me to cut my hair, told me to this, that, or other, like, it was really refreshing to go into this world and be acknowledged. I think it was my second Detroit Lions practice ever. And I was doing a story on then kicker Jason Hansen. And I just got done interviewing Megatron, Calvin Johnson. And I was walking away from that and I heard, "Sunshine, hey, sunshine." I was clean shaven then. And Nick Fairley, our defensive tackle at the time, his favorite movie was Remember the Titans. He watched it before every high school, college, and NFL game. And that made me feel good. We went up, we started talking. They loved talking to me. I was bigger than almost every person on the team. You know, I had long hair. I had Rasta skull candy headphones. I listened to good music. I asked them questions that they wanted to answer because I worked for a monthly, what happened on the field didn't matter. Right. I asked about the soul of a man, what music they liked, what food they liked, where they liked to travel. You know, what would they be doing if maybe they weren't playing sports? And that endeared them to me and vice versa. And the next practice I was at, the Allen Park practice facility off of Rotunda. The entire team was stretching, all 65 of them or whatever. And once I got there, I was up in the second row, like the rafters with all the other journalists. And the entire team started yelling, "Sunshine, hey, sunshine." And the other journalists were just looking around. They're like, who are they talking about? And they saw me and they're like, this guy's been here for 5 minutes and he's already got a nickname. And I was like, sweet. Like, I've always known I'm a good writer. I know I care about sports and I relate to people well, but that was some awesome validation.
And you're bringing the sunshine.
That's great. And I really observed, especially at that time, a lot of journalists, like, they're asking all these, like, how does it feel to catch a touchdown? Questions that demonstrate that they have no experience in sports and they aren't operating from empathy. They're not really putting themselves in their shoes. They're just like, and it made it really easy to stand out. And I loved that world. I had a really cool memory. One of my best friends, he was my photographer at that time because I hadn't made the leap that came in music to be a photographer. We road tripped down to Florida for spring training and we stopped on Nashville coming and going. And we arrived to Lakeland for a Yankees Tigers game. And you know, I saw Reggie Jackson and Jim Leland having this like grumpier old men moment. I met them. I met David Wells.
Yes.
And David Wells is just like, good luck, son. It's a grind. I was like, David Wells, you threw a perfect game the night after being on Saturday Night Live, pretty drunk and we're still hungover. But I believe you that it's a grind. But it was just like really cool. And all the people that worked for MLB.com, they had long hair and tattoos. And I was like, I don't know what everyone was talking about. I was just like, everyone's kind of full of shit.
Right.
And it looks like talent rises and people appreciate people that are themselves and focused on the task at hand. And, you know, that was sweet. And over the years, it was cool. My publisher, Frank Allen, who has passed away since at Sports Detroit Magazine, he had previously had a show on DFN, and he asked me to co-host, and it was cool. We did a lot of live remotes. We'd always like be fundraising for, we did stuff for Wounded Warriors. We did stuff for this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Like, we found a good cause to help out and
I love that.
To give, and you know, we'd have a professional athlete or someone cool on the show, and it was pretty natural for me. And then I had a chance to host my own show, Shaggy Lamb on the Fan, every Saturday from 11 to 1. It was before Grand Valley football. And it was funny because at first I was bad. I wasn't funny. I wasn't myself. And my friends were like, Kevin, what happened? The problem was I was just preparing too much.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like the first time I had nothing prepared and I went in a little like hungover and haggard. Everyone was like, Kevin, that was it. I was like, what? They're like, you were great. You were yourself. I was like, oh, sweet. I just got like 20 hours of my week back because I don't have to prepare.
Yeah.
I just go in and have fun and talk. And I was like, cool. Radio is easy. Thank you. Yeah. And it was really great for the time it lasted. And I've always told people like, it's cool to have something you love and you're good at, but you can only do so much at any time.
Right.
So you put that on the shelf, and as the universe has it, it'll probably come back to you in the right time and right place. Like, there's only so much time in a day. You only have so much energy. And one of the biggest misconceptions in Western culture is that the grind is a good thing. Naps are a good thing. Like, you're supposed to flow. There is a time to rest. There's a time to work. And working yourself under stress scenarios, like, the universe doesn't want you to try harder. It wants you to flow. It wants you to be joyful. It wants you to be grateful. It wants you to, you know, answer that calling in yourself. Like, we're given gifts for a reason.
Right.
And those gifts point us towards people and places and things. Like, maybe listen a little more. It's, and as I've done that and trusted the universe and God, however you want to look at my heart, it's led me to sports writing, to radio, to, you know, now this is my second book in 2 years that I published under my own publishing company, Caffeine Dreams and Love Publishing.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
you're your
with
own
that,
publisher.
Yeah, and with that, I'd like to help other people publish, but even that I'm weary of because I, like you, have a big heart and take on more than I ought to.
Yes.
And once you say yeah to something, you like have to be in on it. And if I'm in on somebody else's book, that means I'm slightly neglecting the four I'm currently writing.
Yes.
Hope to publish in the coming year.
Right. And I love your perspective because while you're shelving one thing, the next thing's revealing itself. And that's what's taking you down your path. I love it. And so that's huge, your own publishing company, and that you want to help be a launching pad for other people. But you've got four in the hopper right now. And can I just ask, is that, are they connected with the first two or
are
they
their own? It's all a bit of a flow. So one of them, which would be most likely the follow-up to Love Is in the Details, is called Love Vigilante. For Love Is in the Details, I developed this style of writing where as the seasons change and holidays and my mood and grief strikes, I'm writing to my mom. I'm giving her updates on me, on the family, on the universe. And so that style of writing is going to always be with me. So there'll be bits and pieces of that in everything.
Which I love. You're giving me the goosebumps because, you know, a lot of people, I got to tell you, I hear it from a lot of people. They're intimidated by poetry. Like, they don't know how to write it. They think they don't know how to write it, or they don't think that's it within them. I think I've always been a huge fan of Jim Morrison, the American poet.
Heck
so
yeah.
Since I was a young kid in early high school years, late junior high years. And, you know, I read all of his poetry, all of those things. And he has a unique style of writing and then performing and his music. It's, it's in everything.
Yeah.
You wove it into everything.
Sure.
And I like that about you. And I like reading passages from your books because – I don't mean this in a negative way. I mean it in a positive way. They're an easy read.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, it's absolutely. Just, that's part of, I took a master class on self-publishing, and it's about having a punchy book or like a book that's approachable, right? Especially these days, people's attention span is short.
There it is.
And as someone who does a lot and has always done a lot and is kind of the entrepreneurial and like heart drive of those things, it's kind of the way I write. Like, I write a piece almost every day, and I usually write that piece in 15 or 20 minutes. I am not one of those writers that spends 4, 5, 7, 8 hours. I'm a prolific writer. I've never experienced writer's block. And generally, when I set the intention to write something, I'm able to, which I'm really grateful for and thankful for. And that's why I've been so intentional with pouring this amount of energy and love into it. And as I live more with grief and connect more with people, I'm becoming more of an authority on it. That's what author means. Author, if you're an author of something, you are speaking from a perspective of authority. And I continue to say this, like, I'm not coming from a scientific background. I've always been function over form. And like yesterday, I wrote something about music and grief, about making a playlist for the ones you love and lost, because I made a playlist for my mom that was played at her wake. So I wrote my mom's obituary. I gave her eulogy. I felt I owed her that. And a lot of that is what ended up being the preface to Love is in the Details. Yeah. And that playlist is with me, and I add to it and I listen to it sometimes when I'm feeling great, sometimes when I'm feeling down. And I recommend that to all people, because whether we know it or not, we have so much historical data and emotion packed into songs, into music. And sometimes it takes us hearing that song, whether intentional or accidental, or maybe with help from our loved ones, to tap into that. And the more I listen to music and think of times when my mom and I were together, the more I'm visiting those memories and the more I am together with my mom. And it's often said that the ones we've lost, their spirits are often orchestrating and coming through music to reach us from the other side and give us important messages, and also messages of comfort, and reminding us that we're not as alone as we think. And the more we look and listen for them, the more we'll see them.
I love that, and I believe in that too. I believe if you pay attention to the signs, they're there, right? And so music's such an interesting and beautiful experience, because it's just such a roller coaster of emotions. Anytime, like you just said, sometimes that very same playlist can make you happy, and you can experience happy emotions, or you can feel sad and you can feel grief with the same playlist. Yeah. And I've experienced that too. And I know during the holiday seasons, a lot of people experience, depression, anxiety, and they really go through the motions. Seasonal affective disorder plays into that.
And, yeah.
You know, music can be such a great healing modality for people. Yeah. And poetry too, your books. Like, I'm happy that we've been connected. I know when we first met and I got your books, I've been peeking through. And even just my process for getting a new book is, while you're writing for, I'm reading for, right? And so I get in that mode, and I'm like, oh no, I got 4 books on tap right now. But just to start a book for me, I commit to a page a day.
Yeah.
And so the next thing you know, it turns into 2 and then 3, because it depends on the book. Yeah. And then you're just turning pages like crazy.
Absolutely.
And then you're finished. Yeah. And then it's just a beautiful experience for that. But I do appreciate the way that you write. And are there any passages in there? I'm sure they all do, because you wrote them. But I mean, is there any special passage in there that you'd want to share with the audience?
I'd love to share something. Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
My mom was a painter, like mixed media, watercolors. And, it was nice growing up in a home that had your mom's artwork. But even once she passed, I was in her nook on the couch in Hilton Head Island. That was their home. And writing her obituary, which is a tough thing, but it was a beautiful thing. And I'm looking around the living room and seeing all of her paintings and all of her work. And I have paintings with her at home. And it just made me really thankful that she created art in the way she did. And she left her fingerprints and watercolor brushstrokes upon the world. So I wrote this piece called Watercolor Brushstrokes. I have entered the first year of my life without you in it, in the traditional sense. Although it is somber and sobering, I feel a continued call to clarity and ascension. My spirituality lets me believe that you are watching over me, and at times walking side by side as I take the necessary steps to align with the gifts I've been given. I am thankful that these gifts can bring such great joy to myself and others. It isn't lost on me that the very words I need to tell myself and be reminded of over time are reflections of the same words that others need to hear. We are so beautifully and infinitely connected, ripples in a single body of water, individual brushstrokes painted in fresco upon the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I might not be able to pick up a phone and give you a call, but your watercolor brushstrokes are layered upon this world, painting their way back to me when I need them most. You have become the comfort of a cathartic cry on a Tuesday morning in January, offering my tears as a water sacrifice for our love's continual evolution and emergence. Your poetry is written upon a winter sky, cascaded upon the clouds, not so different from paintings which hang in your home still today. I'm able to think of you while holding a greater sense of peace in my heart than I was just a few months ago. I don't think I would have made this progress without writing about you. I acknowledge my grief journey ahead will have its peaks and valleys, and when I find myself in the valley below, I will return to these words that I need to hear and once more discover your watercolor brushstrokes painting their way back to me.
That's beautiful. I love that. I can relate, you know, during the holiday season is upon us, and my grandmother passed away on December 5th, which is approaching. Yeah. And so I find comfort in your books because you've written them just for that, you know, just comfort and peace. Also, my brother's birthday, he passed away. His birthday is Christmas Eve.
Oh, you know, that's a tough one.
It is. And mine's the 22nd and December 22nd. And so we always celebrated our birthdays together. So it's just December is a weird month for me. Yeah. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down, because sometimes, like you said, just like listening to your playlist with your music, it's just an ever-evolving roller coaster of emotion.
For sure.
So either from year to year, it's different. Day to day, throughout the months, during the holidays, it's different, because sometimes it's just based on loving memories, good times, and I love that.
Yeah.
And I'm always excited when it's that. And so, you know, and then other times you just kind of have to roll with it, go through the motions and experience that grief. And that's good too.
For
because out of that comes creativity, it comes inspiration, you know, whatever, you know, just paying attention to the signs, like you pointed out.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the signs when I'm experiencing the grief and going through those motions. I don't shy away from that. I lean into that now.
I love that you said lean in. That's good. It's important.
As I used to kind of shy away, shut it down and like, oh, I'm just going to go like turn up loud rock music and work out and just shut it out. And now I just, I lean in. I'm good. It's good.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and that's like, it's something I'm thankful that we had some foresight to prepare for. Like, after your mom or anyone you love or know has a major organ transplant, double lung transplant, the average life expectancy is 5 years. With that said, my mom passed away with healthy lungs. Still playing tennis almost every day. But I was able to prepare for the end before the end. In the year or two leading up to my mom's passing, two of my best friends unexpectedly lost a mom and a dad, and that's really hard. I was grieving my mom while she was still with us, and knowing she faced her end with courage and a sense of humor, it kind of challenged me to step up in that role and following her example and, you know, writing about her really helped me grieve while she was still here. And I kind of like tour managed my mom's end of life scenario because I could, because I was prepared for it at the funeral and the wake and a family reunion based around one of the more trying days of a couple days of your life. Because, you know, that's, we don't choose when we get the family reunions, weddings and funerals, and the lambs are spread out all around the country, and everybody came to Hilton Head for this, which is a blessing, but it's also hard when you're the when you're the kids. So it wasn't really until I was back in Michigan and away from the busyness of end-of-life procedure and didn't have my mom's paintings and family pictures and wasn't really surrounded by people who knew my mom at all, that the heaviest of grief set in. And that's when I started pouring through notebooks. Or I keep an electronic journal. I do both, but I like the record. And I was looking through a lot of the stuff I had written between mid-December and, I don't know, probably end of January while I was there, while my mom was in the hospital, when we learned about leukemia. And in it, I found my way forward. I found my lifeline in all of this, and it was going to be to write this book. And that just helped, knowing I had something to pour it into. And for the first time ever, I wrote a book in a year's time, and it was easy. It was natural. It flowed. I was paying attention to what I was supposed to do next. I referenced talking to my mom for the last time on the vineyard, and she told me in a Beatles song, "It won't be long." And as I'm going back and pouring through these words, I had written a lot about "it won't be long," and I didn't even remember if it was because she had told me or if it was just like another way of it showing up and music showing up and my mom showing up and the Beatles showing up. Like, my first tattoo was "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," like George Harrison. At a young age, I knew I had a certain set of gifts and like an emotional intelligence as an empath, ability to help people feel better, that there was going to be certain things that a lot of people wouldn't notice or care about, and I would. That's kind of what "While My Guitar Gently Weeps" is for me, and acknowledging that I could do something about it, and with my time and energy and love, I do something about it. And that's kind of, love is in the details, and growing into love vigilante. I'm also taking a new step. I'm writing my first band book. Indie folk trio from Northern Ohio, Oliver Hazard. They're breaking nationally, been selling out their own headlining tours, 400 or 500 person rooms. They'll be playing a show in Grand Rapids on Saturday, opening up for Michigander, who's really broke out. We were all at Austin City Limits 2 years together. This year, the highlight of Oliver Hazard and I, we got to go to Newport Folk Fest, which is storied in Newport, Rhode Island. That was the place where Bob Dylan first played electric and got booed off a stage, so to speak. In the folk music world, it's a mecca, and to be received and loved there was a big step. So I'm writing a book called "Welcome to Waterville," an Oliver Hazard story. They're from Waterville, Ohio. It's Toledo, Ohio, and they've created a one-day music festival there called Oliver Hazard Day. Oliver Hazard Perry was a war hero in 1812, Battle of Lake Erie. He defeated a British squadron. They named Perrysburg, Ohio. It became kind of a household name. So they thought that namesake could be a cool way to honor where they're from. And I produce the One Day Music Festival. It's in August of every year. And the book is kind of about an up-and-coming breaking band that shows people what it takes to make it and also what it takes from all the artists who do or don't. A lot of books are written in the greatest hits era of bands' lives when they don't remember the up-and-coming and they're just doing it to squeeze out a buck. But not that many stories are written as a band is still accessible, still grateful, and just on fire and doing some of their greatest work. And I love these guys. The first time I heard them was in 2018. I worked at the Parliament Room of Oda Supply in Ferndale. They're opening up for Michigan Rattlers, who are some of my favorite dudes and musicians. And the first time I heard them, I was just like, wow, I'm in. I don't know what that means, but I want to support you guys and your vision. And the last 7 years, I've kind of been figuring out how. Working with them in some ways as a tour manager, production manager. I hype man and MC with them. That's my most like regular hype man and MC gig. So Friday, I'll drive to Chicago. They've got a sold-out show at Lincoln Hall. And then Grand Rapids, I think at the Elevation Room. So it's always a hoot when I meet up with them. But the most beautiful way is writing this book and interviewing the other bands they've worked with and fans and kids they played baseball with in Little League that broke the lead's nose sewing in baseball. Just showing in all the ways that music really connects with all walks of life. And it feels really good. And I set the intention next year in August at Oliver Hazard Day to have the book I wrote about them for sale on their merch.
Perfect.
Table.
That was my question. I was going to ask when's the launch. So perfect. That's
And that
amazing.
feels really good. It's more prose than poetry. My prose is very poetic. I have the same birthday as Dr. Seuss, and first a poet, then everything else.
Yeah.
On those lines, the other two books I'm writing are children's books. One is about a magical and musical turtle named Speedy.
Okay.
And he writes songs about all of his friends in the Great Lakes to remind them what makes them special and magical. And what makes them special and magical is the good they do for the environment. We've got Babs the Beaver, Fred the Frog, Santiago the Seagull, Helga the Honeybee. There might be one I'm forgetting.
Well, there can never be enough kids' books, I think, and that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And after he writes about them, then a song, he moves on to the next character. And at the end of the first book, they're going to say, Speedy, this is your superpower. This is what makes you magical. And they're going to give him a banjo. And then they're becoming a traveling band and going around to different places. And I can take that to schools and children's hospitals and music festivals.
Yeah,
and
that's fantastic. What inspired you to travel down the path of children's books?
I was visiting my niece in Connecticut pre-pandemic. So what year it was exactly is hard to say. Maybe 17, 18. I was watching a cheesy Hallmark movie. I love Christmas and the season because it's when more people act like I regularly do. So it feels good. I like festive. I like lights. I like joyous. Yeah. I like giving. I like showing up for people. And so I was watching a cheesy Hallmark movie. I was like, I could write something. So I wrote her a children's book in like a couple hours. And I went home and I typed it up and got clip art and stuff and sent it to her as a present. And then I was going to have my mom do the illustrations, but everything like with her fight kind of came in. So I just let it go. Mm-hmm. And it's something I'll return to. But once I finished Love Is in the Details, my sister, I have another niece, and my sister said, hey, Kevin, Eleanor sees that you finished mom's book and she's asking when you're going to write hers. So
yeah.
I was like, all right, so her name's Eleanor, and one of her nicknames is Elefante, like elephant, but said with a French accent. And my joke and notion of Elefante is just as soon as she was crawling, she was running and dancing and singing on stage, and she felt more comfortable and at home on stage than anywhere else in the world. And her talent and gifts took her all around the world. She performed in front of kings and queens, and they even made merch and toys off of Elefante. But as her dreams took her further and further away from home and she performed for bigger and bigger in crowds, she noticed at the end of the night she was all alone and all she wanted was someone to hold her hand and enjoy the company of family or love or warmth. And that was really tough on her and she was sad and she called her mom one day and she didn't have to say it. Her mom could just hear it in her voice. So for the next show, which was in Spain, mom bought a ticket and rode the plane and put herself in the front row and made a sign that says, your mom loves you, Elefante, and everything's going to be all right. And, you know, the Elefante gave her best performance yet, and the book ends with her grateful for mothers who remind their children that everything's going to be okay. I wrote that more recently, and I learned from the first book, children's books have to be quick. So it's like one line a page, you can read it in probably 10 minutes or less, because kids want their favorite book read every night. So think of the moms and dads and the kids, right?
I like that.
So, that's done. I just have to – I have a friend who might do the illustration, but he recently had his first kid, and he's really busy. So I'm deciding how to push forward with that.
Yeah.
But the story's written, and December is a time to slow down and breathe and listen. I continue to write. It's why I love this month, but I also don't feel the need to make any moves, any – bold stances. It's kind of just like a time of reflection and thinking about all the great things I accomplished and experienced this year and reveling in my gratitude and going inward to, you know, we have to let go to let in. And for a while, I've been letting go of things that were a part of my story previously, but might not be going forward, and making space for author, making space for public speaking, making space for ways I can use my writing and ability to speak to engage and
inspire others. I think it's great. And I think I wanted to ask too, like everything you're saying really resonates with me around this time of year too. It's just kind of dialing back and reflecting. I think that's amazing. Obviously, you write and you know how to take care of yourself. You know how to take care of your you have your process and managing grief and loss and emotions and all those things. What are some tips you could share with someone that wanted to find their way into starting poetry or to write a book? What is something inspiring that you could share with someone that has had that on the back burner but just afraid to tap into it?
Yeah, I'd say read more of the way you write. So for me, while I was editing Your Daily Guide to Shine, which 2 years ago now, that was the first time I was reading myself every day. And while I was reading myself, I discovered Young Pueblo and Billy Chapata, two New York Times bestselling authors. Young Pueblo's books, Lighter, Clarity, Inward, and The Way Forward, become very popular. And Billy Chapata, Flowers on the Moon, Chameleon Aura, they're the authors who let me know that the way I write is very popular and sought right now. Self-love, self-care, poetry, that journey inward. And reading them alongside myself as I edited my book helped me know and trust and believe in my gifts. And that
that's
I
great
was
validation.
On the right. Yeah, it's great validation. And I even had the ability for this sec, I connected with Billy Chapata and he gave me great feedback. And I asked him if he would give me a contribution for Love Is in the Details. And at the time, I didn't know he had recently lost his mother.
Wow.
And it wasn't until he gave me his contribution that said, Kevin, you didn't know it, but when you asked me that, I had lost my mother. And so he has an excerpt in this book, and he has a quote on the back of this that's, maybe by holding a space for gratitude for everything lost and the memories that remain, the beauty in grief can finally be found. But it was really remembering that I'm a student and enjoy being a student of my choice and reading a lot. Like, I love reading poetry books. They're easy reads. You can pour through them. Like, I was reading like 4 or 5 books a week as I was really getting into this while I was, you know, doing the class. The class was helpful. It was a little different though, because the class was to tell people how to write a book. I had already written my book. So I was really taking the class for how to publish a book and the due diligence and other around that, and to see things from a new perspective. So it was really helpful. But the most important and consistent thing for me in like turbulent times, which have been the last couple of years, is nature, to be by water. I'm a Pisces water sign, March 2nd. And I've always just been drawn to the beach and the coast and the Great Lakes and comforted by it. You know, the water is peaceful and soothing.
Yeah.
We're made of it. It reminds you that you're small and something grand, but it also helps you. You can form a relationship with it. It's why I moved from Ferndale to Oxford. I live on Oxford Lake. I found a room to rent on a lovely home that's on the water, and my desk is in the window facing the lake where the sun sets.
Love it.
Every day. And, you know, a lot of these last two books were written right there. I go on a lot of walks. You know, I alternate between like a hike and working out at the gym.
All of this is great mental fitness.
Yeah.
That is mental fitness to a T.
Yeah.
For me too. And mental fitness doesn't necessarily mean physical fitness, And I mean, with the walking, with the exception of walking, but when we first chatted, we talked about water and how I had to get out of the town I was in and to the elements. I needed to be around the elements. I needed to be around water. And now I'm on an acre that's its own peninsula. So the water surrounds. So every window I look out, you're going to have to come up.
I'm looking forward
to it. You're going to hit the right
stuff. And have one of those meals that I've been hearing so much.
Yes.
And meet your Great Dane.
Yes. Yeah,
all the things I love.
I actually bought that property for my Great Danes.
Wow.
So it was, I just wanted a place for them to run because they're so majestic when they get to run and play and, you know, and just be themselves.
Yeah.
And so I wanted that for them. And I was looking for that. I didn't have it for them. And then, I'm in that space now and it's a joy. I'm embracing it now because like you said, I just being around those elements inspires creativity and it just allows you to breathe. Like I feel like I had a lung detox just getting to that property. Just within my first month of living there, my sleep pattern changed. Yeah. Even I was like, I never sleep in. Like, I've never woken up with an alarm clock. I wake up at 2, yeah, you know, in the morning and stuff, and I was sleeping until 4 a.m. And I was like, what? This is unheard of.
Madman.
So like, I just
sleeping until 4.
I know, but that's just kind of like how I operate and stuff. Sure. Yeah, but it's just my own internal clock. And now I'm back on the 2 a.m. thing because, yeah, I made myself get back on it. But yeah, it was so peaceful to sleep in like that. Yeah. And I was able to just walk that property and, you know, experience breath.
Yep. Yep. And all of those, like, whether you're a musician or a painter, even if it's not something that's artistically driven, finding peace and balance and rest is a great foundation for anything. And then I'd say the most important thing to do, and the simplest advice I have for anyone, is do what you hope to. If you want to write a book, start writing. Don't be worried about what it's called or where it's going or how you're publishing it. Like, those are good problems to have once you've created something. I had always written a lot. I was writing my whole life in so many different ways and forms. It's only more recently that I've learned the other part. But, like, you know, musicians got to make music. If you're a clothes designer, design clothes. It's not about having a job to do it. You know, we do what we need to do so we can do what we love. I'm an entrepreneur who's worked a million jobs and wore a million hats so I could have the time and space and peace, right? You do what you do over here to take away some of your worry and pay your bills and have rent, and then make sure you're engaging with your passion. Like, passion is a gravitational force that, yeah, aligns you with the things that matter and what you're supposed to be doing. And when I say supposed to, I mean, like, what's in your heart,
yeah,
what you're good at, what brings you joy. Like,
yeah,
if it's not joyful and it doesn't excite you, walk in another direction.
Yep.
If you're doing it because someone else told you, it's probably not the right answer. And if you think you're going to be happier tomorrow than you are today, you're probably lying to yourself.
And I think, too, you don't have to be a writer to put pen to paper.
No.
Just journaling your thoughts or writing. Yeah. It doesn't have to be called journaling, whatever you want to
call it.
Whatever
you want to call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Just pen to paper. I think you'll find that the answers are within the pages that you write.
Yeah.
For the questions.
Absolutely.
That you seek.
And sometimes it just takes a little time. Sometimes you have to put some things down and not knowing what it's going to do or what it's for. You know, it's not about an outcome. It's just therapy. And then maybe a month or two or a year goes by and you come back, you're like, and you see it and it starts to connect more. I know that happens in my writing and with books, like the way it all connects serendipitously and very fluidly. It's remarkable and it's, yeah, divine and it's elegant. And it is further evidence to me that we are not alone here, and,
yeah,
it's supposed to be fun and joyful, and a lot of the fear we have of failing or being an imposter or not being enough is as a result of external factors that aren't really a part of your life. So why are you giving them a say in your inner dialogue, in your inner narrative? I talk a lot about softening in one of my books. We have had a steady conversation with ourselves for however many years we've been alive, yet we probably wouldn't talk to anybody else we love and care about the way we talk to ourselves. So if we can react a little bit less, especially in our hard times, and show just a percentage of that love and kindness and compassion and empathy to ourselves that we show others, it helps.
You make a good point. And also, too, I find that just listening to soothing music helps guide you to put the pen to paper.
Yeah.
When we first connected and chatted, I mentioned to you a band that I got heavily into when I was just really facing some turbulent times. I was reading the book, Be Water, my friend Bruce Lee. It was by Shannon Lee, his daughter. It's The Teachings of Bruce Lee, but
so
he's
cool.
Got many books, and I've been into all of them. But that one I was reading at that time, but I was also listening to the music of Camp. And when we first connected, I was telling you about this band. I was so turbulent because while I was reading the book Be Water, I was I was not water. I was a tsunami at that time. And so it was just, it was very turbulent for me at that time. And I connected with this band Camp, and I would listen to that music, and I found it so soothing.
Yeah.
And I found like my inner monologue through their voice, you know, through that music. And I was wondering if you'd share with the audience a little bit about Camp.
Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of Camp. It's with two A's. They're my other favorite band that's from Ohio. Oliver Hazard and Camp are homies. They had a chance to support them on a tour a couple of years back. And they're from Columbus, Ohio. And the last time I was with Oliver Hazard and they were playing in Columbus, the guys from Camp happened to not be on tour. And they are really loving and supportive. And they came out to the show, and it was, you know, it was just really beautiful.
Yeah.
And Taylor Meyer in Camp, he talked a lot about his love and support of Oliver Hazard and how important it is to show up and look after and advise. And that night kind of proved to be some of the ingredients in Welcome to Waterville, the book I'm writing, because only musicians really understand how hard it is and how much help it requires and what that community lends and means to each other. And I was driving to Grand Rapids to our next show from Columbus, and I had just settled on the title, Welcome to Waterville, as I pass and I see the street sign for Waterville, and Camp was playing on the radio. And I was just like, wow.
You can't make that
universe.
Up, you know?
And, yes. You know, and Camp was pretty consistently like my most listened to band on Spotify. Like, I have a lot of jobs in music, but I don't play an instrument yet. I'm not technically a musician. I'm a writer. I write poetry. I have very lyrical poetry. And so I tend to connect with music with very powerful lyrics, and Camp has amazing lyrics. And it was a get me through album for me years ago. And, you know, the love of my life at the time just wasn't where I was. And I remember running in Ferndale from my house to LA Fitness on Woodward in the snow in the dead of Michigan winter, listening to that same album that you had referenced. Yeah. And that's what music is. That's what writing can be. That's what art is. It takes some of that heaviest pain and emotion, and it turns it into something beautiful that's shared and carried. And now it's really cool that we can talk about this way. Like, one of the things I'm most thankful for, like, most music I listen to, I'm friends with or have a working story with the music and musician and the human. And you just understand it more, and you honor it more, and you fight for it more and protect it more because you really know what it takes. And you touched on something really great, like what type of music you listen to. Some people watch crazy psychological thrillers and they listen to death metal, and then they're surprised when they're on edge. We need a media filter. What we consume is important. Like, I watch a ton of movies, but I regularly have this running list that are generally inspirational true stories that I'll watch hundreds of times because I know the way. It's a tool. It's therapy. It's going to help me feel something. It's going to help me cry. It's going to make me grateful. It's going to remind me the plight that someone else has overcome.
Yeah.
I also listen to very soothing and pleasant music. I have a pretty wide palate, but there's a large variety of things that
your body absorbs. And you make a great point. And so I had to laugh when you said that, because I became very mindful of what comes out of my TV and like what's coming out of my earbuds.
Yeah.
And so, like, even when I'm not a big TV watcher, but I do watch, you know, YouTube and Amazon TV or whatever, just because I'm more selective that way.
Same.
And I'm intentional about it.
Yep.
So I do like TV on at night when I fall asleep.
Okay.
So sometimes it'll be just me searching frequencies or sounds, water sounds, whatever it is, because I just like noise in the background. But I thought back to before I walked away from TV and cable, what was on at night when I was going to bed. And it was always like Court TV or like Wives with Knives, like something crazy. Yeah. And I'm like, God, no wonder I was anxious all the time. I'm watching like this murder mystery shit.
I'm a really lucid dreamer and I remember a ton of my dreams and I try to pay attention to them and let me guide me in waking life, but also discard them because dreams can be a bit of chaos. And like when you're sleeping aside something, like it comes into your dreams. So whether it's commercials, whether it's like you're pulling it in.
Yeah.
You know, I'd even like suggest like the form of what you're falling asleep to, they have audio versions of, you know, I'm usually falling asleep to some audio only, whether it's soothing sounds of nature or certain, you know, frequencies that are healing for deep sleep. Or this time of year, I even love there's very soothing instrumental Christmas music because it's just like kind of warm and joyful without the words.
Yeah.
You know, it's very
different tones can be uplifting. And as far as Christmas music goes, and sometimes, man, sometimes those tones can be dark. Christmas music can be dark sometimes for me.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And just because of I have a, you know, Christmas birthday and my brother and all of that stuff. So it's just sometimes it can be, but other times I do enjoy the sounds and the instrumental. And it takes me back to a time, you know, when we were little kids and that's fun for me. So I love that. But there is something to the power of your body absorbing, you know, what you're watching, what you're listening to. And like even just for TV, you can use a blackout screen, you know, just for a little ambiance and then the music or whatever you've got pumping out of there. But it's all therapy.
And it's a tool, right? Like social media can be a tool, can also be a weapon. One of my favorite classes in undergrad, I went to High Point University in High Point, North Carolina. I was minorities in the media, and I had a professor, one of like three professors I remember, Judy Isaacson, and she really imprinted us on the importance of having a media filter. And this is even before social media. And, you know, she said we're mediated to at all times of all days, and that's only grown. And whether you're aware or not, you're letting it in, especially if you're not aware of it. But you can choose what you let in. Like, you don't have to give social media the power over you. You can use it as a tool. You don't have to be taking your phone to the bathroom. You don't have to be looking at it before you go to sleep. And when you wake up, like, you can decide what music you listen to, what movies you watch, what TV shows you watch, what you don't, who you spend your time with. Like, quit spending time with people that make you feel like shit.
I love that you're going here because I make intentional moves not to take my phone with me places. So I'm very intentional about that. It's like, go outside and play with my dog. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Without the phone in my pocket, no distractions. Yeah. I remember one day, the towers were down. Like, it was over the summer, a Verizon tower was down. So, like, nobody had, it was a beautiful thing because I was like, wow. It kind of gave me, like, it flipped my switch for a minute because I'm like, how's anyone going to get in touch with me? Because, you know, I have a business and things like that. Yeah. And people need to get a hold of me. But I was like, they'll figure it out. I set that phone down. I was like, I'll check on that in a few hours. Yeah. So it was good, but it was so peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to be controlled by that. And, I know, like back when I first started my business, I did a deep disconnect. So like there were times that I could leave, you know, social media for 6 months. You know, you could just deactivate your account. Yeah. And it was just so peaceful not having that. You know, I would go through these little challenges for myself. That's how I walked away from TV.
Okay.
It was like, I just wanted to see if I could get away from it. You know, I was like, let me do a whatever, it was a 30, 60, 90 day challenge. And it was, you know, here I am 9 years later, never went back.
Wow.
So the only time I see TV is if I'm visiting my folks in Florida, because they'll have the news on and they watch mainstream TV cable, whatever, or if I'm at a friend's house and they have it, but not for me.
Yeah.
And it's freeing. It's very freeing. Yeah.
And you feel that time much more intentionally.
Absolutely. That was a huge game changer for me because it led me to invest in myself and those other talents. Like you mentioned earlier that you knew what your gifts were as a young person. I did too. I just didn't know how to implement and where exactly they were going, you know? And so I found that, my gifts lied in helping others and service to others. I knew that as a little kid. I just didn't know exactly how to implement that into my life until later in life, you know, as I became a teenager.
Right.
And then I started to understand a little bit better. And you know what I mean? And then one thing leads to another. And then I was always artistic. I was always different than my brothers. My brothers were more sports driven. I played sports too, but I had the balance of both sides like that.
Nice.
And so like gifts from my mom were always you know, a drafting table or new pencils and like different pastels, different things like that, paint and things.
Right.
And so she always encouraged me to explore that side of myself. And for over the summer, it would be art classes for me.
That's
I didn't do like, you know, I was just more invested in tapping into those sides for me. And so all that creativity, just writing, and I never took any summer writing classes or anything like that. It was just, it went hand in hand with me with the artwork.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was more of the art that I was invested in, because the writing came along with it kind of deal.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can relate a little to that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so,
experience is the best writing class.
Yeah.
You know, try things, volunteer, work a job, help somebody out. It's really that, like, you know, to be a writer or a good writer, you need a balance of living and reflecting. And that's what I'm really thankful for, my role in music and my several roles in music is just, it's given me the gift of perspective. I've been able to walk a million miles in a million people's shoes. And I like the go, 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 because I know I can come back to Oxford and take a breath and go to White Pine Coffee every day and, you know, do my 10 to 2 laptop time and then then retreat. And it's, you kind of need that balance. A lot of people don't understand that. Like when I said the grind is very like misconstrued or misplaced philosophy, it doesn't mean I'm saying that hard work is. Like I'm a very hard worker, but there's a time and a place and there's tact and there's using your energy wisely, and it's, you know, it's just like riding a wave, right? Up and down.
Don't you wish you could be where you were back then? I always say that to myself, because you, once you have that balance and that understanding, and you just want to share that with everybody.
Yeah, but I like to believe it's happening the way it's supposed to.
I agree.
And your current self must thank your former self for getting you to where you are now.
Yeah.
And you have a greater like appreciation for it and an empathy of others who are searching for it. And it helps you share it and teach it without being a dick.
Yeah.
Or without being pretentious.
Yes.
A lot of people are pleasantly surprised as they engage with me that I'm pretty chill. I don't make that big of a deal over the gifts I have. Like they're meaningful to me and I'm self-aware. Like I know I'm a really good fucking writer. And I've worked really hard and continue to sharp that. But like, that doesn't mean I treat people differently. It doesn't mean I treat myself differently. It, you know, we're still just humans here to help each other along the way. And Rumi says we're all just walking each other home, right? Like strengths and weaknesses, that's kind of like loss. It binds us together.
Gifts and vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, strengths and weaknesses, gifts and vulnerabilities, and seeking out the gifts in each other. I agree.
Yeah. If we all had the same gifts, they would be redundant and they wouldn't be gifts.
Exactly. Right? That's why I love meeting people like you to collaborate with, because you know what I mean? I can't say enough about the upcoming projects for 2025 that you can jump in on.
I love it.
What I mean?
It's I'm an enthusiastic jump in guy.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Jackie when we got done. It's just refreshing for me when I meet someone who already has so many great things going, that understands what it is to be the driving force in the entities that they're passionate for, as someone who's always been that. And we're really good at humming in and supporting one each other and doing cool, fun things and helping shine that light and bring other people into the inner circle.
Yeah, exactly.
I really have felt—
You get it.
Yeah, yeah. Like over the last couple of years, the helpers and healers of the earth, of smaller communities, bigger communities, are finding each other.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Because I always find it disheartening when people think, you know, you're a weirdo because you like helping other people. And I'm like, fuck, I don't really know what to do with that because that's how I've always been. Yeah. But I
how dare you, Sean?
I know. And it kind of makes me a weirdo. But I'm like, I always tell everyone, yeah, I'm crazy and a weirdo because people tell me I'm crazy and a weirdo because I've just always found my passion in helping others. And I like seeing other people succeed. And so I like rooting other people on. It's like when you pick out a band that you're passionate about, like you talked about Oliver Hazard and Camp, like those guys are lucky to have you because you're a bit, not only a big support, but there's mentorship and reciprocity in those relationships and they want to see you succeed as much as you want to see them succeed. I mean, you're authoring a book, you know, about these guys and that's amazing. And how lucky they are to have that experience with you. But those are the things that I like doing with my platform, like my podcast. I love meeting people like you. I was so blessed that Jackie introduced us and that I know Jackie. You know what I mean? Because she's an amazing human.
And yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking for all the platforms to collaborate with great humans on. And if that makes me a weirdo, I'm good with that.
Because
I'm too old to care.
Well, the world could use more weirdos like that. I work with Dixon's Violin. He's a visionary violinist, and he often says, if you don't think your friends are weird, you probably don't know them well enough.
There it is. Well, and the famous Jim Morrison quote, where's your will to be weird?
Yep, right? I've always told people, some people try to get weird, other people try to stay weird. My name is Ben Weird. Nice to meet you.
Yes. Yes, sir. I love it. You know, one of the questions I always ask the guests when they come on the show is, what are you looking forward to in 2025? But we've revealed everything during this episode. So, but what are some highlights that you want to maybe share for 2025? I know you've got the four books, you know, on tap here.
Like I'm excited to step more into the children's books. I originally wanted to write them because I wanted children to be in my life more. I have nieces and nephews in Alaska and Connecticut, so I don't get to really be a part of their everyday life. I was a substitute teacher for a while and I was good at it and I really liked the little kids. And I figured if I wrote children's books, I'd have kids in my life more. So I'm excited for that, to kind of see how that is going to come together, which I think it will, to be able to go into schools more, hang with kids more. And
wow, that's a huge, that's a great initiative right there. Getting folks like you into the schools to provide some inspiration and some guidance. I mean, that's big. I mean, I think that it's such a different experience right now within that system.
Yeah.
I went to public school. Yeah, I don't know. Same. Did you too?
Same, yeah.
Right. And so my brother, however, my oldest brother, he went to private school all the way up until high school.
Okay.
And then had like two different experiences.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people that go to private school, and then I know a lot of people that homeschool.
Right.
But I mean, there's something to be said for the public school experience that I loved.
Yeah, it was a melting pot. Like
that's what I was
the jock who threw parties that everyone attended.
Yeah.
Like all walks, you know, at lunch, I'd sit at 15, 20 different tables. I was a melting pot. And
I was a melting pot.
I had a feeling. Yes.
And I also had amazing parties that my parents to this day will tell you, of the three boys, I was the worst one.
Oh, yeah.
And you
want to
know why?
My parents would say the same.
Yes. Yeah. And the reason they say that is because I threw parties at the house, and they'll tell you.
Yeah. I purposely didn't go on trips with my parents so I could throw parties.
So did I. I got a good one for you. So, like, they even got to the point where they would lock the house and I would have to stay at a friend's house.
Yep.
Well, there was this window on the front porch. It was about this big, and I've always been more on the slim, lean side. And I was able to just jimmy that window over and slide in. The next thing you know, 250 of my closest friends are over for a good time.
Yeah, that's how it happened. I had so many friends. They'd love it because my parties were their chance to meet that guy or girl that was outside their clique outside their circle. And it was just, sweet. This is, you know, there's a hot tub, there's a piano. Sometimes my parents were there, sometimes they weren't.
Right.
At a young age, they were kind of like, they were like, cool. They'd rather have us like, you know, be in the house and safe and no one driving than doing what kids are going to do.
Yeah.
So there's a level of trust. And, you know, my home had always been a community gathering place. Like when we were young, it was capture the flag and kickball and baseball and the front yard. We had a trampoline. We had a pond that, you know, we'd catch frogs in and get leeches catching turtles.
All of it. We had like the same childhood
experience.
Each other.
Healthy. And that just kind of stayed with me. And then it was only natural as I like got my first job as a music venue in hospitality, or I was the pedal pub driver on the handlebar in Detroit.
When, yeah,
you know, man, the 15 people that pedal around and get drunk. I was a Captain Detroit for 5 years. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Detroit on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it was great. You're just a host. And you know, now as an author and working in music, I think if more people like looked at life as an opportunity to be a host and provide hospitality and help people feel comfortable, they'd be like, wow, I fit in, I belong, I forge my own path forward, and I didn't fit in any of those shapes people tried to put me in because I'm myself.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of time and love and energy and consistency and trying and failing and getting back up to really like hone and own your magic, but you know, decide what to be.
Honing your craft.
And go be it. Yeah, you know, there's a big, wide, beautiful world, and for those who want it, it's out.
It is. I love how much you believe in yourself, too. And it's not in any kind of arrogant or overly cocky way. It's your truth. And I think that's amazing. And I think that it would be so helpful if people really just explored that within themselves to get there. You know what I mean? It's what people get there when they get there. Yeah. It's, you know, those are things that, you know, you wish you could tell your younger self. But, you know, as we know, life unfolds as it's supposed to in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important to trust that. And it's okay if it's not okay. And it's all right that it's hard for you to articulate your dreams, or it's okay if it's taking longer than you think. Like, try not to compare yourself to others. Try to trust, like, divine time. Like, in an instant, everything can change so quickly.
Yeah.
If you start, you know, thoughts become things. So start speaking what you want from the world and out of the world and in the world more regularly. Like, I practice affirmations that I've kind of, things that I've read in books and things I've shaped to myself and prayers, like, every night, every morning, and I have for years. And some of those have taken years to come to fruition, but most people don't know what they want.
Right.
So until you know what they want, how's the universe or God supposed to provide it? Figure out what you want. Start asking for it. Start visioning it.
You're very in tune and you pay attention. Isn't it something special when you were planting seeds years ago and you see it come to fruition and you never forgot that you planted those seeds?
It's crazy.
Maybe it got away from you for a minute.
Yeah, sometimes it takes something or just like a step back and a reframe, especially when we're busy. When we're busy, we're always looking at the same thing. We're just riding that wave.
Right.
So you're not actually looking back to see what has just happened.
But right.
As soon as that wave crashes and maybe you're navigating some stuff, you're like, look, like, how many of today's realities were yesterday's dreams? How many of these things
happens.
Did you pray for and ask for?
Yes.
Like, it's important. That's why, like, December, end of these years. Like,
I was having these strange senses of deja vu, like, while things unfolded. And I was like, wow, looking back.
You get that same thing?
Yeah. I was like, powerful. Why I had the deja vu was because that was, like, seed planting. Like, I made that happen. You know what I mean? Like, you were working on it behind the scenes, kind of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's strange.
Yeah. And I like to think that every soul here comes with a specific purpose, and that purpose is to expand consciousness. But we come here with a certain goal, to learn certain things. And deja vu for me has always been a reminder that no matter how many times I've been here before, I was following my heart and I was doing the things that I was meant to, that I came here for, that made me feel alive, that reminded me how much of a blessing and gift of an experience this is. And deja vu is always like a nice just pat in the back. Like, yeah, keep heading in this direction. Intuit, continue to intuit. Get out of your head a little bit more and into your heart a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Like, it's divine that we're here today. Like, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't even know you exist. And you're this remarkable shining star of a human with this gorgeous studio here in Clarkston, 25 minutes from my home. And like, you know, now our paths align, and that's a blessing. There are miracles that happen all the time that people just overlook because we as humans, we get used to whatever conditions we have access to, right? Like, people live in Hawaii, they live on the beach, or live near the beach, and they stop going to the ocean. They stop getting in, they stop surfing.
Yeah.
It is in our nature to take for granted the things we love and have asked for, and it's about slowing down and retracing your roots and finding gratitude in the small stuff. So you quit overlooking these subtle joyous, beautiful miracles that happen all the time. And the more we like focus on the good and the blessings, and that's not to be like naive that bad things happen, but like finding silver linings, right? Having a productive response to struggle.
Intentionality.
Yeah. Like navigating the loss of the love of your life by writing a book about her and in her memory that helps you and helps others. And, you know, this is a thunderstorm in Hilton Head Island where she lived. And leading up to her passing, I was having thunderstorms and a lot of dreams, and it frightened me. I knew it was coming, but sometimes after she passed, a thunderstorm came and I was back here in Oxford, and it comforted the shit out of me. I was like, wait, I love thunderstorms. My mom loved thunderstorms.
Yeah.
We loved being aside the ocean and thunderstorms coming in. And, you know, I came up with this concept of a mother's thunder. So many of the things that we fear most are like, we're just looking at it wrong. We're framing it wrong. And there is beauty and elegance and simplicity in so many of the things that we're just not letting in.
Absolutely. Where can people find your book?
Both of these books, Love is in the Details and Your Daily Guide to Shine, are on Amazon. I also sell them directly. I make more money when I sell them directly.
Yeah.
So like you can just reach out to me in any social media and I'll sign copies and mail them to you. But it all goes to a good place. If you happen to be in northern Michigan, Leland Books sells them, or Leland All Books in Leland. There's a Era's coffee shop in Oxford. I'm starting to put it in more and more like local bookstores, but generally either just on Amazon.
Or I was going to say.
A direct message on socials.
Yeah. Bought a nice big stack of both copies on Amazon because anytime I meet a great author, I like to buy a stack of their books and gift them to people that come to the studio and swap them out. And I bought a stack of each. And I can't wait to get the rest of your books as they get released in the future here. What about your social media handles?
It's just my name, Kevin Allen Lamb, no spaces.
Anything.
And I pretty much Instagram, Facebook. I'd referenced Substack before. You can find my Substack from either Instagram or Facebook. That is a place where I'm regularly putting out writing. Like once a week, I do like an email newsletter that just has usually like one piece, you know, one prose or one poem in it. Sometimes some stories and whatnot, but people, you can be a free subscriber or, you know, there's ways that you can be like a monthly or annual. It's cool. That's like one of the avenues I'm excited to continue to like explore is how to monetize that and, you know, have revenue from people who they already have books and they want more writing and they want it maybe as it comes out or just ways to support, which is cool.
Yeah. What about getting you a YouTube channel?
Maybe as I do more great interviews with people like you,
I appreciate that's
something we can do. I had a podcast for a bit called Caffeine Dreams and Love. You can find some of it on Spotify. And at first it was just spoken word of my poems and stuff. Then I did some band interviews, but again, you know how much energy it takes to put into it. I am excited. I have produced an audio book for Love is in the Details, that will be coming out, probably early next year.
Fantastic.
And that's, I imagine all my books will eventually be available in audio form. And I narrate because I enjoy that.
And when we first met, I had told you, I was like, you should really consider doing Audible because, and you should be the, you should be doing the voiceover.
You've got really
a great voice and you have a great presence in the way that you read your written word. It's nobody else can capture that.
I agree and appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, especially like, if you write, you have a style, you have a flow, you know how the words were intended to land, where the space and breath come. So it would be a disservice to allow someone to interpret that and ask them to. And it's really cool. Like I like the full form, right? From an idea to writing it, to publishing it, to producing it in audio. Like that's pretty beautiful. That's like, I love that side of music and learning, like producing your own shows and renting venues and creating the ticket links and marketing it and holding the door for guests when they come in or helping them park the cars. It's, I think if, you know, people who are entrepreneurs understand, it's start to finish. You do the dishes, you take out the trash, you pay and play. You know, you do it all. It's right. not. It's not as just like Dick's. One of the musicians I work with, Dixon's Violin. We always joke a lot about the notion of a rock star lifestyle. Like when we're sleeping in our vehicle, you know, with beds in them at a truck stop and it's like 33 degrees.
Right.
Like, oh, right. No. Getting out and to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. Like people tend to only see like that 2 to 5% of you on stage and
right.
the bright, shiny lights. But like no matter what job or person you're a little envious of, there is a whole other 95% of that job that is a lot of jobs. That's yeah. hard and trying and testing. So when anyone succeeds in an unconventional path, it's a joyous miracle because it's proof, evidence that you can do it. And I've always said, like, with the increased happiness of every single person, the relative happiness of all people goes up. So like, cheer for your friends to succeed, help them succeed. If you're surrounded by people that tell you how you'll fail, they're probably not your people.
Right.
Or you have terribly bad ideas. But I'd like to believe if you believe in something, it's probably decent enough that you could be heard and listened to. So
yeah.
try to find people who help you problem solve or maybe give you an idea off of your idea. Like surround you with people who want to encourage, empower you and see you succeed. And you'll probably just be a lot happier.
I like that. And so I love that you're a hype man too. So I love it. You're so good at it too. I was watching with my studio engineer. We were watching some of your stuff and I was like, he's amazing. It's awesome. I'm hyped. I was hyped.
It's so fun.
Now, how can people, if someone wants to reach out to you, say a musician or a promoter or someone's got an event coming up at a venue, do they just reach out to you?
Yeah, just reach out to me. My website's thisisagoodsound.com. Or just any of my Instagrams, Kevin Allen Lamb, and email me or send me a direct message. Like, I'm super accessible. Like, you can't be an entrepreneur like we are
right.
And not be accessible.
Yeah.
You know, I was a communications and philosophy student who has a master's in communications and leadership studies. Like, I monitor, I'm open to receive, and it's something I love doing. I've done it with a number of bands. You know, I've hosted radio shows. I MC Handmade Music Festival every year in Chesning, Michigan.
Yeah.
Next, we just announced our dates, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, which will be our sixth year in 2025.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's fun. I love doing it. It's silly. It's joyful. And yeah, I look forward to continue kind of stepping into that.
Cool. It's been such a pleasure having you in the studio, and this will not be the last time. I guarantee that. So we have a lot to look forward to in the upcoming months and collaborating and doing different things. And if you like Kevin and you want to follow him on his social media handles, please do so. Yes, Kevin Allen Lamb, to be clear, and order his books on Amazon or through direct purchase.
Kevin Allen Lamb, a.k.a. 6'7", Kevin.
Hype man and poet. All right, guys. Thanks to Kevin for joining me in the studio today. And that's a wrap.